Show dedicated to defending the historic Christian faith. Today, the topic is how to develop good philosophy in the church. This is actually a continuation from another topic that I had with the same guest, and that was discussing bad philosophy and why Christians should care about philosophy in the church. We talked about why there's bad philosophy. Now we're going to try to talk about the solution, which is good philosophy and how to actually bring that into the church. And my guest is Jason Reed. Jason Reed has an undergraduate in philosophy from Iowa State University, a master's in apologetics from Southern Evangelical Seminary, a doctoral candidate at St. Louis University, and he's professor of philosophy currently at Southern Evangelical Seminary. He's actually been a philosophy instructor of a class that I took, metaphysics, and wow, I don't even want to think about it.
That was a deep end of the pool.
Yes, very deep end. Did I leave out anything?
No, that sounds great.
I did leave out something.
What's that?
Aren't you married?
Oh, yeah, my family.
See, I'm trying to help
you. Hope my wife isn't watching.
I'm trying to help you out here.
Yes, I've been happily married for 8 years. I think my wife has been happily married. Okay. I know I've been happily married for 8 years to Holly Reed. We have 3 girls. Lisa is 5. Genevieve is 3. Mary is 6 months. And we just moved to Charlotte a couple months ago to be, like you said, to take the professor of philosophy at Southern Evangelical Seminary. I am working on my dissertation currently at St. Louis University and teaching courses there at the seminary in the fall and in the spring, and just got on full time. So we're excited.
Last time we talked about bad philosophy in the church, and we talked about, for instance, like relativism and pluralism. Mm-hmm. They've actually infiltrated the church, and people mm-hmm. don't realize that it's philosophy. A lot of Christians would say, well, we shouldn't do philosophy. What they don't realize is that they are doing philosophy.
That's right.
They're just doing bad philosophy, and you pointed that out last week. So today we're going to try to talk about, you know, how to rectify that.
Okay.
The first question I have for you is, what is the relationship now between philosophy and apologetics? You know, I love apologetics. I'm an apologist. That's what I do. That's what I do for a living. So what's the relationship now between philosophy and apologetics?
Okay, well, this is a good question. This is a good segue into the answer to this topic. How are we going to get good philosophy in the church? It's a practical question. And what we're proposing in this show is that apologetics is going to be one of the main ways in which we can get good philosophy in the church. So let's look at this. Let's look at philosophy and apologetics. Philosophy, as we said last time, is the love of wisdom. It begins in wonder. It begins in a childlike curiosity. You know, what's the world about? You know, is there a God? You know, look out to the up in the sky. Is all there is all that's out there the stars, or is there something more? You think about the whole history of the universe, and what are we? We're just a blimp on the screen. Is that all we are, or is there more to life than that? So philosophy begins there. We ask these big, big questions about, is there a God? Is there meaning? Is there life after death? And so on. Okay, apologetics is a branch of Christian theology that seeks to give a rational, emphasis on rational, demonstration of the truth claims that Christians make. The Christian church says this: it is true that God exists. It is true that the kind of God exists is a creator. It is true that the Bible is the Word of God. It is true that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. It is true that God has acted in the world in the miraculous, has acted miraculously in space-time. The question becomes, why think that those claims are true? Why think that it's true that God exists? Why think that it is true that Jesus Christ rose from the dead as a unique Son of God, and so on? Apologetics says, we've got answers, and we're going to give you reasons. I'm not going to give you my opinion. I'm not going to give you some type of, it's just my view. Well, there's evidence. We've got reason for it. And so it's a heavy emphasis on the rational. What's the relationship between the two is that apologetics and philosophy are rational inquiries. Namely, that we're trying to say that this is objective. You can test it out for yourself. And so the relationship being is that the apologist is going to use the tools of philosophy to make those demonstrations.
You just reminded me of something. That's why I was smiling here. I gave a talk last week, and my father was there. And it was mm-hmm. a talk on the deity of Christ, you know, proving the deity of Christ. And my father was there, and he was listening to it. And then later on that evening, he said to me, he said, because one of the things I talked about was the fact that
if Christianity is true, then the religions that differ from it must be false. So, like, if Christianity says that Jesus was crucified and Islam says that Jesus wasn't crucified, then Islam must be wrong on that point. And so my father, he looked at me, he said, you're not interested in being politically correct, are you? I said, Dad, the truth is not politically correct. Because the point, you know, like, and that's what you're saying, which as apologists, I'm saying this is true.
You know, that's right.
I'm not trying to be your buddy. I'm not trying to be your friend. I'm just trying to share truth with you. You know, you can accept it or you can reject it, but I'm not here to try to make people, I'm here to share the truth. And that's what apologetics is all about. Now, talking about apologetics, a lot of people out there, lay people in the churches, you know, they just don't know how to use apologetics practically in the church. How can someone who's in the church, a lay person in the church, use apologetics effectively?
I think one of the real practical ways in which you can use apologetics is to think about the kinds of questions that non-believers ask, or even Christians ask. For example, one of the ways in which I got involved in apologetics was people had questions, and they want answers. And so, what do? You start to investigate these answers. Find out on the street what the people are thinking. Go around, like what I did when I was at the university. I went around campus with a questionnaire and asked people, so what do you think about God? What do you think about religion? What do you think about these things? So you can go try to meet the people on the street. You can ask your coworker. Let me ask you this question, okay? You'd be interrogative, kind of like a little Socrates, or, you know, if you ever read Plato, Socrates is like this little gadfly. He's always asking people questions. You can do that as an apologist to get started. Find out what kind of questions you're asking. Go to your coworker. Let me ask you this question. Do you think Christianity is true? What are some of the questions that you have? What would convince you? What would it take to convince you that Christianity was true, and so on? So that's a practical thing. Start going through and finding what the kind of questions people ask, and then try to find the answers. And then provide those answers to the people that are in, you know, on your street, at work, in your family.
Well, here's another thing. I gave a talk, and the pastor did not seem to believe that apologetics was necessary. I mean, his viewpoint was that if you just show the love of Christ, then people will come to be a Christian. You didn't have to get up and defend the faith. You didn't have to prove the existence of God. You didn't have to prove the deity of Jesus. As a matter of fact, another gentleman at the same talk I was giving was like, well, you know what? I was born again when I heard Billy Graham make a call, you know, altar call, and I knew it was true, and that's all I needed. I didn't need all this faith and all this evidence.
Okay.
How would you respond to someone like that?
Was this a pastor you were talking to, or your pastor?
Well, I don't want to say.
Okay. A pastor. Okay.
A pastor.
Okay. Is this pastor Mormon?
No.
Well, that's odd, because the all these reasons that he just gave me are Mormon reasons. And so if I said to, you know, what I do in my apologetics classes is I have a scenario where I use the following terms. There's an evangelist, there's the Word of God, and there's a non-believer. And during the dialogue, I use these sort of terms. The evangelist says to the non-believer, you need to believe in Jesus Christ. And then the non-believer says, oh, I see that you love Jesus, and I see that you really care about us, and that's made a difference in your life. I'll give my life. And I ask the students, is this a great way of witnessing? And I'm really, you know, abridging it. Yeah, it's a great way. You show people that, you know, that God loves them and that he's made a difference in your life and show the love of Christ. Mm. They're going to give their lives to it. I said, you just became a Mormon. Now, why doesn't this work? Because the problem with this approach, the idea of saying that, you know, just show the love of Christ, presupposes, that means assumes, lots of things. Namely, that you've got the answer. It assumes that your Jesus is the right Jesus. It assumes that, I mean, because how many Jesuses are there? Lots of different. Which
right,
one?
Right.
Is it the Archangel Michael? Is that the kind of Jesus I should believe in? Is it the prophet in Islam? Is it the son of Lucifer in Mormonism? Okay? I mean, this idea to show the love of Jesus is a non-Christian way of witnessing. It really is.
I don't know if you remember this, but I was sitting in your office last week, and you were
talking. I remember it.
Okay. You were talking about.
I was there.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. You were talking about what university you were at, and you were talking about these two Hindu guys who, I guess it was on a tennis team or something, you were saying about that. And you were saying that they put the Christians to shame. They were more Christ-like than the Christians were. But your point was that if a person was just looking at, you know, these two people, then they may have become a Hindu. But that doesn't make Hinduism true.
That's right. I mean, it is true that Christianity should make a difference. It is true that Jesus said, they will know that you are one of my, you know, they will know you as a follower of mine because you love each other. Those things are true. Okay. But questions are going to be asked. Question will be asked, well, what happens if the church isn't following Jesus in the right way? Because you and I both know that we, you know, Christians, we fail.
Yeah, you get that right.
You know, we don't claim to be perfect. We just claim to point you to the perfect and so on.
Here's another thing people have told me.
Yeah.
They will say,
sure.
They will say, well, Harl, you know, you've had this formal training in apologetics.
Right.
And, you've sat under these great guys. But what about me? You know, I haven't had this formal training. How am I supposed to go out and witness to people? Because what happens is, what I found is that a lot of Christians don't witness because they are afraid that the person will ask them a question. Because they're afraid that the person may say, why should I believe in Jesus? Why should I believe in Buddha? Why should I believe the Bible? Wasn't the Bible made up? Why should I believe that there's a God anyway? So what Satan has done is he has taken the Christians basically off of the battlefield because they're afraid to get on the battlefield because they're afraid to get into the battle. So how would a Christian who doesn't have the formal training get involved? I mean, what can they do?
Okay, well, first of all, I want to say that some people think, even if there is formal training, that the first assumption they make is formal training and apologetics, all this stuff, is for the intellectual. It's for the pastor. It's for the professor. Okay, it's for those sorts of people. Those people can get it. I can't. Well, let me tell you a little bit about my intellectual journey. One of the objections I get from the everyday person is, well, sure, Professor Reed, I mean, look at you. Look at all the training that you've gotten. It's like we were talking about. You know, you've studied under great minds, and you've studied all these things. I can't begin to do that. You know, so what's a person like me supposed to do? It's very daunting. Okay. Well, when I became a Christian back in 1992, I had read two books in my lifetime, and one was a Spider-Man comic book. I was in remedial math in second grade. I got held back in second grade. If you'd see me back, 20 years ago, I was anything but an intellectual. But I had a curiosity. After I became a Christian, I either had a choice to make. If I'm going to witness and be a light to the world, I've got to answer these questions. I've got to be able to answer them for myself, because I've got people, I got Mormons twisting me in knots, Jehovah's Witnesses test twisting me in knots, I've got skeptics twisting me in knots. I don't like being twisted in knots. Okay, it makes you ineffective. I got to get answers to these. So I just started to read. So one of the ways to get formal training, first of all, you've got to believe that you can get it. You've got to believe that you can get it. I taught at a Bible college up in the Midwest with people who had become Christians late in life. They had high school, the highest level of education they had was a sophomore year in high school, and I taught them apologetics. All you need to do apologetics, to get involved in formal training, is to have a curiosity, a love for the Lord, and hard work ethic. That's what you need. What do you do in the meantime? I don't have any formal training. There are conferences. You go to these conferences. You really have to make a commitment to apologetics. There are lots of great resources out there. Go on the website and type in Christian apologetics. Find out there are lectures online. There are beginner's books. When Skeptics Ask by Dr. Norman Geisler. Living Loud by Geisler and Holden. Tons of resources you can get that puts the cookies on the bottom shelf and begin there. And that kind of give you an appetite for it. And then go to these conferences. Meet these people. And I guess that's the answer. You got to find it. You got to go where the answers are, and go where you can get the kind of training. If you can't get there, there's also the internet. So that's what I would do.
And
that's
also,
what I did.
And also, we're commanded to do apologetics because we're commanded, 1 Peter 3:15, to always give an answer to anyone who asks us to give the reason for the hope that we have. That's what this show is named after.
Right.
1 Peter 3:15. So it's not an option. Paul didn't say you should, give an answer. Paul said, it was a command. We must give an answer.
Yeah. Paul didn't say, if it's your spiritual gift,
right,
give an answer.
Right.
He didn't say, wait until you get your PhD again, answer. He didn't say, here's a nice idea, here's a suggestion, if you feel like it. No, it's in the imperative. Always be ready to give a defense. 2 Corinthians 10:5, we demolish arguments. Paul, over and over again, is reasoning and demonstrating from the scriptures. Jude 3 says, contend for the faith. These are all in the imperative. It's a command to go give apologetics. So whether you like it or not, you're commanded to. So it's not an option. That's right.
Now, unfortunately, very few churches teach apologetics. Very few churches have apologetic program that teaches Christians how to defend their faith, even though we're commanded to do that.
Right.
How can we convince the church leadership that they need to take, you know, active role in this type of stuff?
Right. I think the resistance to apologetics in the church is based upon a confusion. There's a confusion between what's most important and how do you get to the most important. As an apologist and as a professor of philosophy and apologetics, I would agree that the most important thing there is loving Jesus and giving your life to Him. Having faith in God is the most important thing. But don't confuse the most important thing with getting there. And one of the good analogy is courtship, being married. The most important thing in my relationship with my wife is my love for her. Am I caring for her? Having faith in her and so on. But if I went up to her and said all these great important things to her and she had never known me before, she would probably say I was some weirdo. What are you saying? Don't you understand? I love you.
Right?
This is the most important thing there is. Well, sure, but in order to know whether or not something is the most important, you've got a reason to it. And so when churches start to realize, yes, that there is room for faith in Jesus, love in Jesus, that the relationship that we have as an apologist is that we give support and we try to lead people to the most important. Just like the only way for me to convince my wife that I really love her is to give her evidence that I love her, that I truly would commit myself to her. You know, same thing with the non-believer. The most important thing is to love for Jesus, but why should I love him versus someone else? Get that distinction, and the resistance can be met. Another way we can get church apologetics in the church is for people to read their Bibles and to follow the Bible. We've got to get, in my view, I mean, I've been thinking about this for quite a while, how can we get this mandate? I mean, the Bible is, I mean, it's clear, and your shows have repeatedly mentioned that this is a mandate from God.
Right.
Now, what I don't understand, I mean, no one debates that we should pray. No one debates whether or not we should evangelize. But we debate about apologetics. Why? Because we have been influenced by the bad philosophy we talked about the last episode. Why do we reject apologetics? Because we have non-Christian ideas in the church. We have to show the Christians that there's no reason to fear the skeptic. There's no reason to fear the agnostic. There's no reason to fear the atheist. We have answers. So we have answers, and God commands us to give those answers. And then as churches start to see the value in it, we can then start hiring someone to do the apologetics. Anyone that's involved in apologetics knows how much time it takes.
Oh, I know.
Our churches have family pastors. We have a pastor just for family matters. We have pastors for the youth. We have pastors for missions and evangelism. Okay. Why do we have pastors for these things? Because the church recognizes that these are the functions of the church. So if we see that one of the functions of the church is to defend the Christian faith on a rational level, then they should hire someone to have that function, to train Christians to do that. And that would meet the problem of the formal training. Right. The reason why Christians are struggling to give apologetics without formal training is because the church doesn't recognize it as being valuable.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that disappointed me. Not only our church is not doing it, but I've even come across churches that resist it. And I find that mind baffling. I mean, how do you resist something that you're commanded to do? And I think maybe part of that is that you start getting into the head knowledge, then somehow you're diminishing a personal relationship, but that somehow your faith is weakened, because if you have evidence, then somehow then there's no faith.
Right. I mean, that's what we talked about last time, is that sees faith in conflict with one another. that as one increases, the one must decrease. That's just false.
Right.
That can be more false. We see in Romans 1, where Paul's talking about the human race having evidence, conclusive evidence, that God exists. Reason has shown them, and what we mean by reason is they see the evidence and they make the correct inference. There is a creator God. That didn't diminish faith. That's what holds them accountable. And as an apologist, as a philosopher, I know that the more reason I use, the tougher faith gets. Why? Because I know what the truth is. And the truth calls for me to give my life to it. It's easier to have this kind of, it's easier to have faith. It's easier to be unfaithful and to backslide not using your reason. Because the reason is God's instrument to find the truth. And the more you find the truth, the more convicting it gets. Just like in Romans 1. What'd they do? They didn't, the people in Romans 1 didn't use their reason to get rid of God. What'd they do? They gave up reason.
Hmm.
They gave it up.
Right.
Well, how'd they give it up? They gave their lives over, they gave themselves to a lifestyle. That's what happened. And so the irony is that the more you follow reason, the more you're going to find God.
Yeah.
To get rid of God, you've got to deny reason.
And that's another thing that I wanted to mention is that there's this belief that in order to become a Christian, you have to somehow give up reason. And my view is that, no, if you exercise your reason more fully, you will become a Christian. Because if you exercise your reason and look at the evidence, then the evidence will lead you to Christianity. It's the people who aren't exercising reason that we find in cults and mm-hmm. other religions, because they are taking it on faith. They are not looking at the evidence. This is just some kind of a lot of times an emotional experience. A lot of times there may be other reasons. But I'm convinced if people actually exercise their reason, then Christianity would be the only choice.
The only choice, and then you'll see that their denial of Christianity wouldn't be rational.
Right.
Right. It's not going to be rational. When you give up reason, that's the wrong thing to do. It's irrational to be a non-Christian.
Right.
It's irrational. And so
now atheists wouldn't. You know, there are a lot of atheists who would argue with you on that. They were like,
that's a different show.
Right.
But I would say to the atheist, just real quickly, how do you account for reason if atheism is true? See, the atheist thinks that we're going to follow reason. It's conclusion. The problem is atheism can't give a reason for reason.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
We can talk about atheism. Yeah, I got a whole talk about what you can do on atheism and skepticism on this line about the problem. But as it stands, I think there's a compelling argument to be made that, at least, let's put it this way. The scripture's clear that if you're a Christian, this is the way it happens.
Right.
That reason leads us to God, doesn't take us away from God.
And another thing is that if God gave us intellect, then why would he want us to overrule it when it came to making our the most important decision that there is to make, a decision about him, mm-hmm. coming to an understanding of him. It just doesn't make any sense that we're supposed to abandon this God-given reason, this reason that makes us in his image in the first place.
Right. In any other area of life, any other avenue of life, any other decision we make, what do? We try to find the rational thing is to do. Right? We think, well, gosh, do I want to marry this person? I'll just take a blind leap of faith. I don't know who you are. I'm just going to do this. You know, well, should I go in the stock market? Should I put my money in this account? I don't care about the evidence. I'm just going to go on faith because that's the right thing to do. On these temporal decisions, we exercise reason all the time, right?
Right.
Now, how much more so on the most important question, should we use our reason?
I was listening to the Bible Answer Man one time with Hank Handegraff, and the guy called him up, and he said, I'm looking for a religion, and I want your advice on what religion should I seek? Is Christianity, is that a good religion for me to belong to? I mean, it was like a matter of taste. It was like, okay, blueberry pie, apple pie. It was like he was talking about taste. You know, when he should have been looking at which religion is true, he's looking at what religion would I enjoy most. Which seems to be what he was saying.
Right. Well, one of the big reasons to do apologetics in the church today is so that we can actually clarify for the non-Christian the right questions they should be asking. So when the non-Christian comes and asks me, like, for example, let's say someone like talking to Hank, well, should I pick Christianity for me? The apologist is going to clarify for the non-Christian the questions they should be asking. You're asking the wrong question. How do I know that? What's the right question? The question is Christianity true?
Right.
That's the question we should be asking. And one of the reasons why there's so much resistance in the church, and I'll be very blunt, because Christians aren't, for the most part, lots of Christians aren't very good at it. When I was talking to a student, and he said, I tried apologetics several times and never got anywhere, so it's just not worth anything. And so I asked him, how'd you do apologetics? What were the answers that you gave? They were lousy answers. I think one of the reasons why we're resistant, the church is resistant to it, is because there aren't a whole lot of trained, it's kind of this catch-22, there aren't a whole lot of trained, well-trained apologists.
Right.
And so we need to start investing our time and money and train these guys and to get the good, solid training and bring it back home. That's what I would say. I would say send someone to a school, get them trained, and bring them back.
You're right, because when I go and talk, I've noticed that when I open the floor for questions and answers, that people have a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people really do want to know. And sometimes they're a little afraid to ask because they're like, well, if I ask this question, then that may mean that I don't have faith. Someone else may think that I don't have faith. If I question why is there evil, if I question, you know, how do we know there's a God, I can't let anyone know that I don't have any faith, so people are quiet about it. But people have questions, and we need to bring these questions out.
And it's amazing how emboldened you can become and fierce you can become when you think you've got answers.
Right.
When I started doing apologetics and I started dialoguing with non-Christians and using the things I'd read in Geiser's books and William Lane Craig's books and things I had, tapes I had gotten, you can get tapes too, that I actually was answering the questions and winning the discussion. Like, man, Christianity really is true. And all of a sudden, you're just ready to share with everyone.
Right.
When you have answers, you're willing to share with everyone. Why? Because you're not afraid anymore.
Right.
You
right.
really think that it's true. I mean, it's just all those things.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Jason Reed.
Is that it?
That's the end of another show.
Okay.
I thank you very much for coming.
You're
on.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
That will end this episode of Giving an Answer. Be sure to join me again next time. And until then, goodbye and God bless.